All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News. It's a Monday morning. We're live on December 19th. You might hear us again over the holiday season as we look back on 2022 and take a breather ahead of 2023. Regardless, it's nice to be here. It's nice to feel somewhat alive again after several days off for illness, with whatever crud is going around. And again, if you missed the last hour, apologies in advance for any sniffles or coughs as we continue to make our way through the minefield of viruses that have littered the landscape with carcasses like mine. If you'd like to give us a call, 715-388-7155 is our number here up north, and our regular switchboard number works as well, with Aaron Zommers here with us to help us staff the phones, get you on the air, talk about what's on your mind for this Monday. We're going to get into some state stories coming up at 7:15 and 7:30, but I wanted to start this hour with a little bit about social media, maybe a little bit about the economy. From a social media standpoint, again, we're reminded that the world and our country in particular is often divided into those who really follow something closely and then everybody else who couldn't care less. And so keep that in mind when I say, let's talk about Twitter. All right, now that everybody's clicked off, who doesn't want to be a part of that, for those folks who don't use it, Twitter is crashing and burning in a way that you can't take your eyes off of it. Ever since Elon Musk purchased it, ostensibly to, you know, reform it in much the same way that Donald Trump was going to reform politics, reform, I think some people mix up the definition and think that by reforming something, you're supposed to completely set it on fire and stomp out the ashes and then say, look, it's as good as new.
He just keeps digging himself a deeper and deeper hole. And you're like, well, you thought you'd have hit bedrock by now, but nope.
No, just keeps getting farther. The big move over the weekend was when Musk began banning reporters from Twitter. He'd start suspending the accounts of traditional journalists, good journalists, who were calling attention to the things that Musk was doing with Twitter, especially that whole part about, you know, bringing Nazis back and letting, reinstating accounts of entities, you know, people and groups proven to be passing along misinformation or hate speech, and saying, well, you know, if we're going to have true freedom of speech, we have to bring them back and everybody has to take part. But then you start banning the reporters who call it out, and it no longer looks like you're an advocate of free speech. It now looks like you're, you know, just trying to turn Twitter into 4chan or QAnon or something like that. And as one Twitter user, Jess Coleman, put up, you know, they always like to use George Soros, who is a billionaire who funds a lot of causes on the left. So it becomes very easy to compare Elon Musk to, say, a George Soros when Jess Coleman writes, if George Soros bought Twitter and then promptly banned a bunch of Fox News reporters who were critical of him, I am fairly certain Republicans would stop the rotation of the earth with all the noise they'd be making about what an outrage this is. And it's absolutely true. Again, just or again, if you're not familiar with George Soros, let's just say Hillary Clinton somehow had the money to buy Twitter and started banning reporters. I mean, it's not so much that her critics would be outraged. It's what mainstream media sites would be doing. They would be calling it an outrage and giving plenty of credibility to Republicans who would want to investigate and see if the government can put Twitter out of business and whatnot. But, you know, when Elon Musk does it, like, oh, isn't that quirky? Look at what this guy's doing. You know, and that's what we're seeing right now. And it is just, again, that reminder that I've been offering for decades about having the balanced media diet. For those folks who rely not only on Twitter, but only on a subset of it, of nothing but sites that you agree with, you're not doing yourself any favors. It is not easy to find people and news outlets that you don't always agree with, but also don't, you know, insult your intelligence, but actually do make you think and challenge you. But it's worth it to look for them. And it's, again, one of those things where you don't have to spend a lot of time with it, but look outside your comfort zone now and then. Even I turn on Fox News once in a great while, mostly to laugh that they still have the word news in their name, but to see yet again that when everybody else is talking about, you know, issue A, they're over here telling you that caravans of illegal immigrants are, you know, about to come pouring into Topeka, Kansas, you know, or Wisconsin Rapids and take everybody's job. Everybody's job doesn't work that way. But somewhere along the line, they may get you thinking about, well, what is it that we should be doing with immigration? How can we be doing things differently and better? So it's a good instance to, again, try to have that well-rounded diet, which is tougher than ever when we've gone from 3 channels to 500 channels to a nearly limitless stream of, you know, social media posts, blogs, and now podcasts. But the work should never end to keep looking at the new things that pop up now and then and saying, you know, this is a good place to get a little bit of information, learn something new, kind of makes me feel a little bit better, and, you know, then see what else is happening. It's what we're trying to do here on Civic Media with a whole new bevy of shows and hosts and things to talk about, and we're glad you're along for the ride. We'll have more of Up North News Radio after this. As we look back at the headlines of 2022, we unfortunately are going to have to continue to talk about 2020 simply because the criminal behavior that took place in 2020 leading up to January 6, 2021 has yet to net what I would call any kind of consequences, legal consequences, for those who plotted to overturn an American election. And so as much as we might get frustrated that certain Republicans want to relitigate 2020, I think it is important that we continue to pursue justice against those who were committing fraud in 2020 and continue to lie about it to this day. And so we learned over the weekend that federal prosecutors have now examined more than 100,000 documents seized from the email accounts of 3 lawyers associated with former President Trump as part of their investigation into the role they played in the scheme to help Trump overturn the elections, especially the promoting of a plan to create fake slates of pro-Trump electors in states like Wisconsin that were actually won by Joe Biden. And so the investigation into that goes on from the U.S. Department of Justice. But it has been noted repeatedly that there is potential for state prosecution as well, because state laws were almost certainly broken as part of this as well. And State Attorney General Josh Call has been asked about it. Demands have been made of him. Questions were asked recently, most recently by A.J. Byatt-Poor on Capital City Sunday through WKOW-TV in Madison. And they put up a clip over the weekend of State Attorney General Josh Call being questioned by A.J. about acknowledging that, yes, the U.S. Department of Justice is looking into the fake elector scheme for potential criminal charges, but shouldn't we be seeing something at the state level as well? And here's what the Attorney General had to say.
We don't comment on any potential or ongoing investigations. But what I can say generally is that, you know, when the federal government is investigating a topic that can lead to other investigations in any area, and so it remains to be seen what comes of this, but I'm glad that the federal government is conducting such a thorough investigation.
Well, that report did note that it's possible to conduct state and federal investigations kind of at the same time, just on parallel tracks, and they specifically pointed to the state statutes of falsely assuming to act as a public officer and simulating a legal process. Can you say if those are aspects of state law that this could potentially apply to?
Again, I'm not going to comment on any potential state actions related to this issue. It's sometimes the case that there is a federal investigation and state investigators wait for investigative activity. It's sometimes the case that things happen in parallel. But what we do know here is the federal government is investigating, and I think it's important. I'm glad they are. But again, can't comment further on anything at the state.
So it sounds like you're saying you're waiting for the federal government to run its course first before initiating a state investigation?
What I'm saying is that we're not commenting in any way on what the Department of Justice is or would be doing in connection with this issue.
What would your message be to anyone watching this who feels they're disappointed that there hasn't been more action at the state level?
Well, I'd say that the federal government is investigating this, and I believe that they are going to conduct a full and thorough investigation, and that they will follow the facts where they lead. That doesn't preclude state action, but again, what happens is going to depend on the facts and ultimately what comes of what we're seeing play out with the federal investigation.
So it again raises that tension, if you will, between the U.S. Department of Justice and other entities, specifically the January 6th committee. You'll recall that when the January 6th committee announced that it was going to be holding hearings over the summer, I was among those who thought, well, is this really going to be necessary? Is this a duplication of efforts with the U.S. Department of Justice? And my thinking at the time was that, well, I think the January 6th committee has to do something because everybody's tired of waiting to see if the U.S. Department of Justice is actually going to bring something forward, or if they're basically dragging their feet, but, you know, we'll never know because of the line of saying, well, we can't comment on, you know, an investigation in progress, which is always kind of a cop-out because, again, you know, without any kind of update whatsoever, do we really know that there's an investigation in process? So the January 6th committee began their work. Well, I don't know if it was redundant to the U.S. Department of Justice, but it sure was illuminating to the general public to see things that the January 6th committee uncovered and brought to the public's attention. And again, whether the Department of Justice already had all of this information, we're not clear. It could also be that the Department of Justice folks were like, wow, we did not know this as part of our investigation. Now let's get the January 6th committee to share info with us. And so what you saw was the benefit of having two different entities investigating things. It appears that one was not stepping on the toes of the other, which is a risk, but in this case, it appears more was better, that another group looking into something this serious and essentially putting it on a faster track was beneficial in terms of helping the public understand just how widespread this conspiracy was and how serious it was and just how bad things could have become if this coup plot had a better path towards success. So the Attorney General mentioned a report that said that, yes, there could be both federal and state level investigations of the fake elector scheme. And so to quote part of the report here, some have questioned whether state prosecutions of the fake electors in Wisconsin and other states are necessary or desirable, especially given a reported criminal investigation at the federal level. In other words, signs that the U.S. Department of Justice is investigating the scheme may appear to preclude the need for parallel proceedings in Wisconsin state courts. But the potential state law violations outlined above would give the state courts jurisdiction and an important role to play in these circumstances, particularly when the investigations might prioritize different actors. Both levels of prosecution are critical to prevent perpetrators from slipping through the cracks. State prosecutors may be more inclined to focus on local offenders, for instance, while their federal counterparts may target national players. Adopting a two-prong approach, as is in fact common in the American justice system, helps ensure that all implicated parties are brought to justice. I mean, that's just as well said as can be, is that the federal investigation, you know, may get the ringleaders of something like this, but it may, you know, in the name of prioritizing their resources, allow others, you know, at more of the state or local level to slip through the cracks. Now, I will, for example, pick on one of my former state Senate colleagues, now Congressman Scott Fitzgerald, who facilitated the state Capitol meeting room where the slate of fake electors met and filled out a fraudulent series of ballots and paperwork to send in, paperwork that Ron Johnson very nearly was able to deliver to Vice President Mike Pence on that fateful January 6th day. If Scott Fitzgerald has run afoul of any federal laws in so doing, that would be caught up as part of the U.S. Department of Justice investigation. If he broke any state laws, that may not come up without a state-level investigation. And as Attorney General Josh Call said, that might happen after a federal investigation. But if there were a state investigation going on right now to see if Fitzgerald or any of the other fake electors or anybody, any of the attorneys as part of this plot broke state law, there's nothing in all of this that says a state investigation would undermine the federal one. And so that's where I and a lot of people hope that, in fact, there is an active state investigation going on right now, and that when the time is right, and again, hopefully sooner rather than later, because we're coming up now on 2 years, it has been 2 years since the fake electors plot was hatched and executed at the Wisconsin State Capitol, it is very, very arguably past time for justice to be served to the folks who took part in that part of an effort to overturn the will of the voters in the United States and in Wisconsin in 2020. Let's talk about the economy for a minute. And a lot of the focus in 2022 early on was about inflation. And whose fault was it? Why would Tony Evers allow there to be inflation? The power that Tony Evers has at the global level to cause inflation around the planet, and what can Tim Michels do about that? I mean, well, that's the way the campaign commercial sounded, right? But as we learned during the campaign, not only is it not something a governor can do anything about single-handedly, it's nothing a president can do anything about single-handedly. It was a global phenomenon because this was a global pandemic that crippled the entire world economy. And as the economy recovered, that recovery played with supply chains, and supply and demand was affected, which affected prices, and that led to inflation. Inflation in this particular instance is much like the fever that I had last week. It's a sign that your body is working to make itself better, but you're going to feel like crap for a little while until things get better. If your body weren't fighting this, you're going to get a lot worse than you feel right now.
It's also something that, even though it sucks in the moment, we know it is well documented that your body is going to do it, and we have ways to react to it and try to help, but we can't stop ourselves from getting a fever.
No, you can't. And that fever is going to be there. And so you try to accommodate your condition as best you can. And that's what economists and policymakers are trying to do right now. When we talk about the potential for a recession, it really comes down to what are the things that you're doing to slow inflation? And to slow inflation means you have to slow the rapid growth in the economy. You have to make it harder for some parts of the economy to grow too fast. And so by raising interest rates, it does mean that some folks aren't going to be able to afford to buy that house or that car or expand that business or what have you. And for those folks, well, they see it as signs of a recession, that things are, you're going to overshoot things and too many people are going to be prevented from taking part in the economy. So how do you thread that needle? Well, to do it just right, to minimize the fever, if you will, requires something that is called or has been called a soft landing. A lot of economists, I guess, don't like that term, but they like the term recession even less. But Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, you know, wants to caution folks that he doesn't think a recession is necessarily coming, though people might want to qualify it as such but that you shouldn't, because the economy is still growing at a net positive. You know, he says it's not going to feel like a boom. It's going to feel like much slower growth. And I love that one UW poli sci professor, Mark Kapilovich, says you could call it a landing, if you will. With only very modest increases in unemployment and no sharp deceleration, rather squishy, kind of mushy, perhaps subdued or possibly muted. But apparently we just can't use the S word for soft landing, even though that appears to be where we're headed after all. More after this. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend.
Well, you know, as we look ahead to 2023, it's worth noting that for all the attention given this past year to the state's other leading Republicans, like Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Senator Ron Johnson, and gubernatorial nominee Tim Michels, there is another leading Republican who doesn't attract as much attention, but who is, I guess you'd say, almost indisputably in the position of being the one most hostile to American democracy, most aggressive in breaking the norms for having a functional government, and most likely to waste the greatest amount of your tax dollars in the coming year. This person that you probably haven't heard of is Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu, who was quoted by WisPolitics on Friday as saying he wants to, quote, restart the process of considering Governor Tony Evers' appointments. That's right. Devin Lemahieu, the Senate Republican leader in Madison, wants to restart something that he has been blocking for years. The Republican from Oostburg took over the post as Senate Republican leader when Scott Fitzgerald won a seat in Congress. That was right about the time, you'll recall, that he was helping Donald Trump's team set up a fraudulent state of imposters in an effort to overturn the will of the voters in 2020. But prior to that, Fitzgerald, along with Voss, conspired to block the confirmation of more than 100 cabinet and agency nominees from Evers. Not because there was anything wrong with even a single nominee, nothing that rendered them incapable or unworthy of serving the Wisconsin people, but solely to use party politics for the first time at this level to abuse the oversight function given to the Wisconsin legislature. This isn't something that's being said, by the way, out of political thin air. The emails exist. The text messages exist, all because of their roles in the conspiracy to have a Natural Resources Board member, Fred Prehn, who is a squatter on the board, refuse to leave more than a year after his term expired. And Fitzgerald left, and Lemahieu and other Senate Republicans continue to withhold the confirmation of Evers' nominees, even 4 years into his entire first term in office. Well, to demonstrate the utter shamelessness and disregard for democracy that Lemahieu has, he told WisPolitics that he wants to, quote, restart the nominating process because he has concerns with some Evers appointees, especially, get this, appointees to the Natural Resources Board. In other words, already caught with one hand in the cookie jar, Lemahieu is using the other hand to flip Wisconsin a middle finger and then reach that hand into the cookie jar too, because he just doesn't care. Doesn't care that the voters who chose Governor Evers once and then twice don't have their votes respected and honored. It's not in Lemahieu's character to respect the will of the voters if he has the power through rigged maps and supermajorities and the ability to thwart whatever it is the people of Wisconsin want, as long as his party's interests take precedent. Here's how Lemahieu put it to WisPolitics about restarting the confirmation process. Quote, I'm sure there will be some that we may vote down, but we'll confirm some too. Did you catch that? He is already promising to play politics with the careers of good public servants for no valid reason, to say, I'm sure there may be some that we vote down, but we'll confirm some too. What might be the reasons that some nominees are voted down? Did they conspire to defy Wisconsin voters and stay beyond their term on a board? Did they commit some kind of political crime like rigging legislative district maps? Did they waste an exorbitant amount of tax dollars on things like a phony investigation into an election simply because they didn't like the outcome and wanted to use your tax dollars to cast doubt on the legitimacy of the people the voters chose? Did they put politics above the very health of their constituents by denying affordable health care coverage that's been available for more than a decade through the federal government? I mean, if Evers' nominees didn't do any of these things, but you did, Devin Lemahieu, then who are you to judge the worthiness of these public servants? But again, in your mind, this is all part of a restart of the process. Even as you spend time talking about ways to use a record budget surplus in a way certain not to pass, because again, your guy didn't win the governor's race, just as he didn't win 4 years earlier. The governor you have is the governor the people chose. And you could either start to respect that, or we could find ourselves into continued gridlock because of the work that you're doing to literally thwart democracy and prevent voters from having the governor that they chose pick his or her cabinet, his or her department leaders, agency heads, and whatnot. This is a function that should have done quickly, should have been done easily in January of 2019. And yet here we are, 4 years later, still blocking appointments, still saying you have concerns about them, still looking for ways to waste taxpayer money, still looking for ways to squander a record surplus. And if you missed it in the last hour, we talked about how in Minnesota, they also have a newly reelected Democratic governor, Tim Walz, again, after a very spirited campaign. But this time around, in a state that does not have rigged maps, the legislature went with the will of the voters, and Democrats control not only the governor's office, but both houses of the legislature. And they have a record budget surplus, one that's much larger than Wisconsin's because of the way they have been good stewards of their economy. And they're going to use part of that, Governor Walz said late last week. They're going to use it to do even more to recruit talented individuals to come to Minnesota to live and work, because we know about the shortages in our labor force. How do you attract those folks? Well, to hear Republicans politicians say it, it's low taxes, number one, and there is no number two. It's just that. Lower taxes, maybe say you're going to lower regulations, and that will attract people. When study after study shows that's not what does it. Doesn't attract workers, doesn't attract entrepreneurs. They're looking for a good place to live and work. They're looking for a place with jobs. They're looking for places with opportunities, with recreation, with affordable places to live. And if you're focused solely on the political partisan matters, that's not going to attract people. In fact, it's going to chase people away. And that's what we have in Wisconsin. It's repeatedly proven over and over and over again, that we are chasing away many of our best and brightest. And it's going to get worse if if Minnesota is showing that they are investing in the schools that their kids are going to go to, that they are investing in the roads, that they are investing in broadband, that they are investing in healthcare. And if all they see from politicians controlling the Wisconsin legislature are dysfunction, gridlock, spending more time blocking nominees from 4 years ago than doing things that will actually attract the best and brightest to Wisconsin, that's not a fight we're going to win. I mean, it's still fine for Devin LeMahieu and Robin Voss and the other Republicans in the legislature. They are guaranteed their paycheck. $50,000 a year they make from you and me. They made $50,000 a piece in 2022, being in session in the months of January and February, and that's it. They went home from March through now, got paid that same $50,000 salary, and did next to nothing other than campaign. They didn't do the work. Minnesota's governor is talking about doing the work. And we're the ones who are going to pay that price until and unless we convince the Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature to take their job seriously. Now, we're not going to talk about elections for legislature because now the next ones are 2 years away. So the trick from this point going forward is for those Republican legislators, not the leadership, they don't care about you, but for your local legislator, your local Republican, to start feeling some heat and to start getting them to finally say in their caucus to the Devin LeMahieu's out there, hey, we need to get something done. We need to just let's just get these nominations over with, because we've got to figure out how we're going to attract people to attend the UW system or one of the other many great schools in the state, rather than the University of Minnesota or Minnesota State or any other school elsewhere outside of Wisconsin. We've got to work on that kind of attraction, and we're not going to do it by telling high school seniors, hey, our taxes are going to be lower for corporations. Our local Republican legislators have to hear that they need to earn that paycheck in 2023. They didn't earn it in 2022, but that's over. That's in the past. The name of the game now is for Republican legislators to get enough pressure from their constituents that they put pressure on their leaders to finally show up and get some work done. There is a new Miss America, and she is from Wisconsin. Her name is Grace Stanky. She was crowned Miss America 2023 on Thursday night at the annual competition. Grace is the first nuclear engineering major to compete, much less win, in the Miss America competition. There's a $50,000 cash scholarship that goes along with it, and a form, if you will, a soapbox to talk. And she becomes the third Miss Wisconsin to become Miss America. The others were Laura Kepler in 2011 and Terry Musin in 1973. I mean, 73, you're talking about going back to the glory days of the old Miss America pageant with Burt Parks hosting. Were you able to find the video there of Burt Parks announcing Terry Musin's Miss Wisconsin win in 1973? Let's give a listen to that.
Gentlemen, one of these six lovely ladies is our new Miss America. Which one is she? Our new Miss America, Terry Ann Musin, Miss Wisconsin.
I was looking over the weekend about the Miss America first pageant and now competition, and look, everything. All things evolve in some way or another over time. So we're not going to spend a lot of time focusing on the past of the Miss America pageant. It's, again, like a lot of things, something that, you know, lived in its time. And thankfully, we have moved beyond that. The whole trick is, do you continue to exist or do you tear it all down and build something else up? I would liken it to, say, the Democratic Party, which was the party on the wrong side of everything once upon a time, you know, after the Civil War. I mean, it's history in the 19th century and the early 20th century is utterly shameful. But thanks to folks like, you know, Hubert Humphrey, and then later, you know, Lyndon Johnson, who didn't have the most stellar beginnings, again, as a Democrat, but again, who turned things around, you had a party that eventually saw the light and began to thrive. Once again, especially here in Wisconsin, where there were virtually no Democrats in the early 1950s. But by the end of the 1950s, you know, you had Bill Proxmire and Gaylord Nelson and a host of other folks who were pointing the way forward. So it goes with the Miss America competition, which is nothing like what it used to be when it quite literally was described as a bathing beauty competition on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. But over time, it has changed. It has had its fair share of growing pains, I think it would be fair to say, and is looking and perhaps discovering that new direction of helping women show themselves at their very best, at their most passionate and thoughtful, rather than, you know, necessarily shallow or self-serving. Well, look, I ran out of time. More after this. So the point I was trying to make before losing sight of my clock was that if you want to learn more about the current new Miss America from Wisconsin, Grace Stanky, go to upnorthnewswi.com. It is right there on the front page. The boys are back in the sense that Terry Bell and Pat Kreitlow are no longer feeling like death warmed over, but are almost back to the point where we can do a cohesive live radio segment together. Terry, how are you?
I'm feeling great. It's nice that you're on the rebound, too.
Getting there. The poor listeners have only had to hear a couple of coughs and sniffles, but like I said, it's been a wicked few days, and I know a lot, you know, certainly people have it worse, and I tried not to be too much of a baby, but man, this one hit hard. I'm not going to lie.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's that time of year. There's all kinds of stuff going around, and people should be careful.
Yeah. I mean, what I was telling folks early in the show about the New York Times had this article about, you know, do you have RSV or flu? Well, first off, you can't really tell, you know, but you might have this symptom or that symptom. You could take this medicine or that medicine. And the fact of the matter is, for all the things that we've been able to do with so many other diseases and things, when it comes to the common cold and then certain other respiratory viruses, you're still almost at just the chicken soup thing. Just do, if ibuprofen works, take it, take some chicken soup, get on the couch, let it pass. You know, we're just not at the point where, you know, you treat something like this with just a, you know, a tablet or a vaccine. It's just part of the joy of being a human being is that you never know what bug is going to take you down to what degree.
You know, the funny thing is when it is a choice, I absolutely love to kick back by myself and relax and have absolutely nothing to do. It's absolutely wonderful. But when it is not a choice, when it is mandatory, oh my gosh, it's torture.
I remember, you know, I struggled through the shows on Tuesday and Wednesday. And the way that I put it to Aaron late Wednesday was I can't even pretend to prep for a show on Thursday that I didn't even want to see my desk. And I love my desk. I love to get my work done. I love to read. And you're right. It was just like the only places to be were the couch or the bed, which a lot of times when you're overworked, you really want to be there. But when you're feeling half past dead, it's like, I don't want to be here, but I got no choice. I got to be right here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those folks who are in that position today, I guess we'll get to, instead of now that the World Cup's over, I think the big thing on TV will be the January 6th committee, I'm going to say the series finale. I do not mean to liken politics to sports or TV, but you know that would be the parallel of it. This is kind of the wrap up episode.
It does kind of feel like where we're at, that politics is part of can be television, radio, entertainment for a lot of folks. But yeah, especially dealing with this particular former president, you know, we may see criminal charges going all the way that high. So history is going to be made today in all likelihood.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, because you're talking about not just the final report, but also possible referrals to the Justice Department on charges of insurrection, obstruction of an official proceeding of Congress, conspiracy to defraud the United States, referrals that would not carry any legal weight. They wouldn't compel the Justice Department to take any action, according to the New York Times, but would send a powerful signal that a congressional committee believes that the former president committed certain crimes. Again, it doesn't resolve anything, but it is an important milepost along the way.
Oh, nothing like this has ever happened before. This is just absolutely unprecedented.
I think in part because, again, you're dealing with the utter shamelessness of something. When Nixon left, you, again, can see the photo of that solitary figure walking along a beach in, you know, near San Clemente in wingtip shoes, you know, and understanding that he was in exile. With Trump, he, in some ways, he is kind of in exile, but he's in exile with a bunch of sycophants around him at Mar-a-Lago. And again, without the real consequences, which is why this proceeding is important, because if, in fact, he broke laws, it is time for this country to decide if, you know, if every former president is above the law for actions that they took or not. So this is not a small thing today.
No, this is absolutely incredibly significant and will go a long way towards deciding whether we're going to be a nation of laws or a nation of men. So absolutely. And I should mention, Pat, we are going to have live coverage throughout the Civic Media Network stations of the January 6th meeting today. Coverage will start roughly at noon or so. And we'll bring everybody all the information as it happens.
So now I know my plan for today is going to involve a legal pad and following along with that as I'm able to, because, again, visiting some of the grandkids, the three-year-old's going to have his tablet. He's going to be watching Mickey Mouse Club. The nine-month-old is going to be, you know, crawling hither and yon. But so my notes might be a little scattershot, but I got a feeling that I can rely on you if I need you to fill in any gaps.
That's what we're here for, Pat.
Sounds good. Are you following much of anything else as we head into Christmas? It's kind of one of the slower news weeks, I guess.
Yeah, it's one of those slow news weeks. I guess last week what we saw maybe is maybe one of the bigger stories in Wisconsin would be Representative Janelle Branchen losing her leadership post on the Wisconsin Elections Committee, or at least the Assembly's Election Committee. That may or may not matter for a whole lot. I mean, she's been marginalized quite a bit in recent weeks, and that seems to be continuing to do so. It would seem to me the Republicans are trying to hold off damage. They saw what happened after the Supreme Court ruling on abortion, and they see where people are at in terms of election denial and other issues coming up, abortion in Wisconsin. And I think there's going to be some concession to what polling is saying the majority of people want.
I think we're simply going to face an extended period here, like it or not, of, shall we say, not a kumbaya moment, you know, in political circles, that as much as you'd like to think people would say, okay, it's a new year, let's just get some of this, you know, let's just figure some things out and move forward. Instead, it's going to be people coming from the extremes with, well, let's just give all the surplus away and you know, and what have you. And eventually something will get done. But unfortunately, in, say, the case of the state budget, you know, it's due June 30th. Maybe it's June 29th that, you know, Republicans and Governor Evers finally come to an agreement on something. I don't mean to sound negative about it, but I don't think we're going to see something in January.
Well, when was the last time a budget passed on time?
Oh, I know. heck, but each party has had control of the legislature and barely got it done on time by the time they can agree amongst themselves. But that's what we have to look forward to. So instead, we'll spend this week and the next kind of looking back and then, you know, looking ahead and making our best guesses along the way. And then you get to get annoyed with me having the countdown till pitchers and catchers report, because we got to do something else once the holidays are passed and we got the rest of winter to go through.
Bucks and six.
There you go. And a lot of bucks and six. I will take that. Thanks so much, Terry. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat.
All right. Coming up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba for everybody else along the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Again, thanks so much for your patience during my time in sick leave. We'll do this all again come Tuesday. Have a great day.